If your appliances can't handle the holiday hosting heat, December deal drops at Lowe's makes upgrading easy. Get up to 35% off select major appliances, and rewards members save an additional $40 on the Whirlpool electric range and the over-the-range microwave. Plus, get up to 60% off select ladders so you can deck all the halls. Lowe's. We help. You save. Valid through 12/10. While supplies last. Selection varies by location. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. See Lowe's.com/terms for details.
Hello everyone, welcome to the NRF1 podcast. This week, as we look back to Austria, the Austrian Grand Prix, which we all remember very fondly, I'm sure, and ahead, more importantly, to the British Grand Prix, Formula One, coming home for 2015 to Silverstone, of course. My name is Michael Bailey, and I am joined this week by Richard Baxter and Steve Rust. Gentlemen, I hope we're both very well. Richard, how are you? It's been a lovely warm day here in Norfolk.
It is. It's very warm. Black leather seats in your car are quite aggressive on your back as you drive through heat. But yeah, apart from that, good.
I guess that's why they don't have black leather seats in Formula One when they're racing in, you know, Abu Dhabi.
No, if you're Vettel, it's more of the leopard print seat, isn't it? So.
Oh dear, I'm quite perturbed that you've mentioned that one. Steve, how are you doing?
Yeah, good, thanks. Yeah.
You enjoying the weather? Are you a sun fan?
Oh, definitely.
Well, that's good. It's how you should be as well, yeah. Especially with the summertime. We don't always get it for very long, so we have to make the most of these things. Well then, as I started off by mentioning, we will cut to the British Grand Prix forthcoming very quickly, I'm sure. But let's start off with Austria. It wasn't the greatest race, but possibly quite significant, given we have a Drivers' Championship back on, Rich.
Absolutely. I think it's only 10 points between the two now. And yes, you asked earlier in the season whether it's all over. And I said, well, you want a glimmer of hope? Look at last season, how that quickly turned around. And it, not quite to the same measure, but it's kind of along the same kind of lines. It's close again, and who knows what's going to happen going into Britain. They both won there the last 2 years, I believe. So
Yeah, Lewis won last year. I think Lewis has won, when he's won the British Grand Prix, he's won the championship in the 2 years. I think that's right.
Oh, don't say things like that.
So you never know. I'd have to check. I'm pretty sure he won it in 2008.
Probably.
Yeah, he did win the Grand Prix, yeah, in 2008. That was the wet Grand Prix, wasn't it? That's right, yeah.
So boom, yeah. That's all I'm saying. And obviously we'll get into Silverstone later. But Rosberg, I mean, it was a very weird one in Austria, wasn't it, really? Because in the race, there wasn't much Lewis could do. And they both made mistakes in qualifying, so it's hardly a faultless weekend of it.
Yeah, to be honest, I thought they actually did overall. Mercedes better than last year, because, I mean, last year they just really struggled with this track for some reason or another. But, I mean, they made their mistakes, but they got the front row. To me, it was a bit surprising that Rosberg actually, you know, beat him, probably in my mind, for the first time, probably, unless someone can correct me on that. But I did sort of wonder whether it was a case of sort of, you know, maybe this wasn't Hamilton's best track, or maybe, you know, he lost out at the start and sort of thought, I'll let him have this one. I'll let him have this one, give him a glimmer of hope, and then absolutely cane his ass in the next one.
Well, there's the first beep of the year, I think, probably. Well, that's an interesting one, isn't it? Because Lewis was asked, I think, afterwards whether he just doesn't like this track. He hasn't gone particularly well there, has he? And he does seem to struggle in places, but he was like, no, it's fine, I don't worry about it, which I suppose he would say in public.
Yeah, he did. He also was excused for the post-race test at Austria, which was, you know, quite interesting, but fair enough to him. If he didn't want to do the test, he had other things on, like the Graham Norton show, for example, it seems. But no, I mean, he's not the only one who struggles, because I saw in practice as well, quite a few drivers were running wide and had a few spins. And to be honest, I did put on Twitter, that's what people have been complaining about. Oh, we want to see people struggle with their cars, they're not hard enough to drive. And it's like, well, I'm not sure about that personally, and there's a bit of evidence for, you know, to back it up.
Yeah, we'll get stuck into that later as well, because I think that's a good discussion to have, definitely. It was probably the start that won it for Nico Rosberg. qualifying was fun though, wasn't it? I mean, it was hilarious when Lewis basically mucked up his lap, and then you immediately cut to Nico Rosberg, who's in the gravel trap.
Yeah, I mean, it was just it was bizarre actually, but I actually made it a bit more of an exciting qualifying all in all, to be honest, rather than sort of a reasonably predictable Saturday. But yeah, I mean, it was, because when I saw the Hamilton actually first spin, I thought, oh no, you know, it was like, for me, it was like repeats of sort of last year where he struggled. And then when they flicked to the next shot, I was just sort of like, my initial thoughts was, I thought it was a replay, and I thought, no, that's not a replay, because if it was different car numbered crash hats, you'd look for things like that. And I thought, blimey, Rosberg has done exactly the same. You know, it was just strange.
Hilarious. Here's a little random one for you. Has Lewis Hamilton ever done a grid walk? Has he ever been on the grid when Martin Brundle or David Coulthard have been around to do it? I can't remember the last time I saw him and seen him on.
He, in his McLaren days, Martin Brundle did speak to him when he was on pole position for a race. I can't remember which one it was, but I believe that's the only time.
It's very, very infrequent.
They did allude to it, I remember, when he was on Top Gear, I think the first time as the star on the car. Jeremy Clarkson said, have you noticed every time Martin Brundle speaks to you on the grid, you don't have such a good race? So maybe there's some superstition he's picked up from that.
That's very interesting. And,
good spot, Rich.
Good spot, like that a lot. Okay, let's have some NRF1 pit stops. Pit stops, not such a successful thing for Sebastian Vettel, it appears. I mean, that kind of mucked up his race and Ferrari's, given what happened to Kimi in qualifying, in that it didn't.
Yeah, I don't really know what happened to Kimi in qualifying. I don't really know, because he just didn't.
They assumed he'd presumably done enough, or that they had forgotten about the fact that everyone else was going to get progressively quicker on the drying track in qualifying. But it was a complete muck up, and of course Sebastian Vettel, they just mucked up the pit stop with him during the race, didn't they?
I don't know when the last time Ferrari have really struggled, because they've always been pretty decent with their pit stops. And I mean, I know we had McLaren a couple of seasons ago, didn't we, where they were struggling with all sorts, and with Hamilton and Button, but I don't think that's the first time this season they've had a slow stop, is it?
No.
So
they're usually pretty quick, actually, aren't they? I mean, I think they've got pretty close to like Red Bull's record, most, you know, fairly consistently close.
Yeah, it's almost like a form thing, isn't it, in a way? It's a strange old thing. Interesting with Kimi, I mean, his crash with Fernando Alonso, I mean, that was quite horrific in a way, especially when you saw the sharp edge of Fernando's car roll across and only just miss Kimi's head.
Yeah, it's... You think, whoa. I remember watching the race and just thinking, whoa, what's happened there? And then I remember they were talking about, oh, Alonso clipped him, and then he's lost, or he just seemed to lose it under power, and then Alonso had nowhere to go and just went over the top. And it was a bit like Spa in 2012.
Yeah.
Yeah, where Alonso just seemed to, he bounced across Hamilton, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Or Hamilton bounced across him, even. Yeah. And it was just almost a bit of a replay of that, but yeah. It's good that no one was hurt.
Yes, it is, and lucky. I mean, it's the element of the fact that however safe you make these things, you're riding by luck so often.
Open top, aren't they? So yeah, but I mean, the amazing thing about that is that it appeared that none of the camera angles could really show you exactly what did happen. Because I mean, they showed you Kimi's on board, and it appeared that everything was fine with him, and then you saw him get a bump, and then it all happened. But they never showed the onboard for Alonso, which should have shown you presumably what actually happened, but it was not really documented afterwards. I mean, Alonso just said the crash was weird, and Raikkonen said he didn't really know what happened, and that was it. There was nothing. The teams didn't sort of say, well, this is what happened. It was just all very quiet. It was a bit bizarre.
Classic McLaren at the moment with their weird crashes.
This is the thing with Formula One. You know, we often forget how dangerous it still is. And even with, you know, Jules Bianchi last year, we saw how dangerous it can be from just something, you know, an unfortunate event. And again, you know, these things can still happen, and it's still a dangerous sport. So you have to give credit to the drivers for their bravery of getting back in the car and getting out there every week as well.
You do, and I don't think you will ever have this kind of sport without it being dangerous. I think that's just, and all the drivers know that when they take it up.
Interesting one with Kimi, because it seems now that we've got him, Valtteri Bottas, and Nico Hülkenberg all being touted for Ferrari seat next year, even though I'm not sure Ferrari want it to be touted for at the moment. We'll go straight to Force India, shall we? Nico Hülkenberg obviously had a brilliant time of it in Le Mans. Everyone was going on about it all weekend. Fair enough, because it was awesome, although he was one of three men and probably not the actual standout driver of the three men, but it great result for him. And he sort of carried it through, didn't he? Qualified fifth. I think it was his best qualifying of the season so far. Drove well in the race. And he's probably got a bit of hunger back for where the rest of the season can take him now.
Yeah, I think it's good for him, really, isn't it? Because, I mean, for me, Nico Hülkenberg has always been someone who I'd have liked to have seen in a fast car in Formula 1. And it's never quite happened. It's always been rumoured with Ferrari. And I think over the years there has been one or two other teams mentioned. But it's never quite happened. So to give him... yeah, a little bit of success there, you know, in another sport, I think is good. You know, I mean, you never know. I mean, you could see him in a Ferrari seat next year. You know, Kimi did always say that he would see the contract out and he would most probably call it a day, because I noticed David Coulthard has said that he thinks Kimi Raikkonen should call it a day. He's noticing, you know, that he's reached his peak. From his own experiences, he said, I can see that with Kimi. So you never know, you could see Nico Hülkenberg, you know, sort of promoted up, if you like.
I know several years ago I was speaking to the guys at Supernova, one of Norfolk's former GP2 teams. They're still going. I think they're involved in Formula E at the moment, which of course was a cracking weekend in London, by the way. And he at the time, I think Nico Hülkenberg just won the GP2 championship, and like I think it was David Sears I was speaking to, he said Nico Hülkenberg is definitely the real deal in terms of how he went about it. And I suppose he's shown it at times in Formula 1, hasn't he? But it is just the car maybe hasn't been there for him.
Yeah, I mean, I think there was an interview with Sky he did, and he was talking about, you know, what, because I don't think he's won a race yet, and he was saying about, you know, oh, should he have won a race by now? And he had time with Force India in 2012 again. And that was the Brazilian Grand Prix, and he was up there fighting with McLaren's in, you know, changing conditions, and he was doing really well. But then he lost out of spin, and he took out Hamilton in the process. But you know, he's had a few chances where he's been up there. I think he's been on the podium several times, and you think he's got, you know, the talent there. He just needs the, you know, the team to give him the opportunity. And they were talking about it last year as well, weren't they? And the possibly was it season before, but because of the weight rules they were bringing in. And they're saying, well, he's a heavier driver, the teams aren't going to want to take that chance. And you think, that's not what it should be about. You know, if he's got talent, he should be in the car.
It's interesting when they say that, because, of course, Pastor Maldonado has won a race, and it almost puts into perspective the fact that he probably had one chance to win a race, and he took it. So, you know, he's been bashed a lot. But that said, no one's bashing him anymore, because he's in top form. And he had some great moments in the race, probably the highlights of him, you know, flipping and slipping and sliding and all sorts.
Yeah, that was unbelievable, really.
Sort of a catch, wasn't it, alongside Max Verstappen, is that right?
Yeah, he was closing in behind Verstappen, and Verstappen then moved defensive. And I think Maldonado just suddenly decided, rather than going up the inside, you know, thought, oh, that's a closing gap, I'll go to the outside. And because it was a bit of a weave, with DRS open, the back end just slid a bit. And how he caught it is pretty unbelievable. But... and he still got past because Verstappen then locked up and ran wide anyway. So it's quite a lot of entertainment in the space of one corner. So
we like him when he's doing that sort of stuff, when he's being lively. I mean, not when he's crashing into everyone and becoming a bit of a figure of fun almost. But the way he's racing at the moment, it's good.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, it's perhaps some of the other drivers should take a look at, you know, and take a leaf out of his book. You know, just take a few more chances. I mean, at the end of the day, it's a race, isn't it? Yeah, you're all potentially there to win, aren't you?
I wonder if that's kind of the, I don't know, this South American kind of style of driving as well. Because we saw with Montoya quite a few years ago, he was quite hot-headed at moments, and he was quite, you know, lively. I remember him bumping Michael Schumacher as he was getting past in Brazil again, I think it was. And he had that, you know, similar kind of style, but then there's also a few mistakes that went in. But, yeah, I mean... It's entertaining to watch, and that's what you like to see.
When he gets it right, absolutely. Let's touch on Williams, shall we? The one thing I didn't mention when we were talking about Ferrari is Maurizio Arrivabene almost getting run over by Felipe Massa. Yeah. Quite comic. And there was some good work on social media as to other situations he was avoiding in similar pose, which was also quite funny. But yeah, that was a bit fortuitous, a bit weird.
Yeah, I mean, you seem to look up the pit lane and think, oh yeah, that's clear. He started wandering across, and then just that second, Massa was released from his pit box. And good reactions from Massa to stop, and Arrivabene kind of waved to say sorry and, you know, step back. But there was a good bit after where you saw them shaking hands and, you know, hugging it out, having a bit of a laugh about it. But as you say on social media, some of the pictures, I saw one relating to a certain dinosaur film.
Yeah. Jurassic World or Park, can't remember. All of them. They're all great. Well, I'll have to link those on the Twitter feed at the NRF1 as it stands. We'll do that most definitely. It was a nice bit with Felipe Massa and his little boy. I think he was doing some press and BBC, and he had his little boy with him, and then I think he told him off at one point, which is kind of nice to see him being dad for a bit. And we touched on Valtteri Bottas, who's obviously been in pretty good form recently, but he just didn't have a weekend for it. I think he had a problem with the car and it seemed to slow him up and took him out of contention.
I can't really remember that much about his race, actually. I mean,
well, that was probably the problem, wasn't it? It was a bit out of it.
Yeah, where did he finish now again?
Fifth.
I can't even remember him even in the race, to be honest.
Can you remember anything of his race, Rich?
No.
It was definitely a problem. I think this was kind of the issue with Austria, which is also on here because, you know, it wasn't the best race. The track is good. And why didn't it just spark?
To be fair to Bottas, so, you know, he kind of slipped under the radar a bit, but he started sixth, he finished fifth. It's still a good haul of points. And for the constructors, it's keeping them tight with Ferrari-ish. Yeah.
Ish. Well, if Ferrari keep mucking up, then it'll probably help them out.
I think overall, I think the race was a bit dull. You know, I mean, apart from obviously the crash at the start and an odd few moments, I mean, it wasn't one of the best. And unfortunately for me, I think it sort of spells really the sort of the image problem that Formula One has at the moment. I mean, this is one of the old school circuits, which were always said to be some of the better ones. But, I mean, it just sort of... Some of the drivers sort of said that they found it difficult to overtake at this circuit, but I mean, it's not like it's sort of, you know, so it's not like Japan's or somewhere like that where it is an old motorcycle track and it is a bit sort of narrow for things like that. I don't know, really. It's just, I think it's just the whole sort of image problem that Formula One has got at the moment.
Well, we'll have a word about that again in a bit. Steve's busy shaking his head.
He's got some ideas.
Yeah. Well, we're going to fix Formula One. Don't forget, that's our task this season. There were penalties all over the place. The grid was a bit of a joke. Drivers had penalties that were for more places than they could give away on the grid, so they had to take stop and goes as well. Jenson Button was basically done after lap one because of his penalties. What can we have this? Because it just made the whole thing a bit of a laughing stock, didn't it?
Well, they were saying, Lance Mundell was saying, they're trying to make it so the drivers can't get any advantage at all for making engine changes and this and the other. But it's kind of a bit like, well, okay, if you're going to give them a massive penalty of 25 places and they're going to move back seven, for example, with the McLarens especially, you think, why not just say to them, okay, you have to start from the pit lane because they're going to be far enough behind anyway, and it's not going to be, you know, not on the grid, they're not going to make up for places. And instead, they're going basically, especially at Austria, which is, you know, 1 minute 11 lap, they're, you know, quite continuously doing. And when it's that short, going down the pit lane, and you're losing 30 seconds, you're miles behind anyway. And it's just a bit of a shambles. And
it's one of the problems Formula One has got in that it's trying to create these rules to be relevant to technology. Yeah, the fans, do they care if someone's used five out of six of their engines or they've got any engines left? Or, you know, they just want to see the grid line up and the drivers do what they can do and prove how good they are.
Yeah, I quite agree, actually. But, I mean, it's a sort of a fine balance, really, between, you know, having a fair sort of Formula One, you know, to sort of not try to spoil it, you know, for the sort of spectacle it is. I mean, we're the sort of first to sort of jump around sort of saying all these sort of, you know, penalties is ridiculous, but then on the flip side we would also be the first to jump around and sort of say, well, you know, it's not particularly fair, this team has gained a massive advantage, you know, it's a fine balance, isn't it? I think sometimes when things just go right and you don't get penalties flown around, we're not talking about it. It's, they're there for a reason, but they can sometimes, like right now, come across as just being a little bit too much. I don't know, it's difficult. It is difficult.
We're not going to bother sticking our heads around McLaren because I don't think anything's changed and they're just screwed, basically. But all the same with Red Bull, really, to be honest, as well. That said, Christian Horner called one of his racers Daniel Ricciardo, which I presume he continues to call him Ricciardo because that's how his name's spelt. None of this Ricciardo rubbish. Just thought I'd reiterate that point from last year or whenever I started making it.
One thing I will just quickly say on McLaren, in the post-Austria test, Alonso completed over 100 laps in one day without breakdown.
Were they quick?
Not especially, but at least it was reliable, which is a positive.
I suppose maybe it's turning the engine up that's the issue. Well, see, yeah, exactly. The more data they have, the better they will be. That is most definitely the case. And I guess they were doing it with a few upgrades as well. So you'd like to think so. And the only other place I wanted to stop with Sauber, Marcus Ericsson got penalised for a jump start where I think he moved forward, but then basically just stayed there and everyone went past him and still got penalised for the jump start. What is the point? Just let it go, surely? Does it matter at that point?
Well, he realised he jump-started and then, you know, stood on the brakes to say, oh, no, and then let other people get that, basically a jump on him, so to speak. And you think, fair play to him, you know, he could have just gone and it could have been carnage, but he didn't, you know, he's like, no, I'm going to say. But then, yeah, you can let it go, but also you have to stick with it and say, well, another driver might jump start and carry on going, and then you say, well, should he get penalised?
Yes, then he gets penalised.
There has to be a clear line, doesn't there?
And don't forget, like, if you, with a similar rule, if you cut a corner and overtake the driver ahead of you, if you immediately give that place back and wait for two corners, you most of the time will avoid a penalty for it, you know, so that's kind of really given discretion. And I think with how he did it, I think he should have been given discretion. Like, he would have been on the other side of that rule. Because, I mean, he lost out massively from it. He didn't gain anything in the slightest.
He finished two paces further back from where he started, so.
So I thought the penalty was totally stupid.
Attaboy. Let's have some of the weekends then, shall we? We'll rattle through these. A driver of the weekend, who wants?
Maldonado. I think that's the second time running I've said that.
In a row, yeah.
Yeah. But he's picked up. We have bashed him quite a bit. But he's picked up. He got seventh place. His teammate retired, so he beat his teammate. But he's beginning to show a bit of quality and, yeah, decent driving. So I'll give it to him. But also, big shout to Massa, who had a splendid race.
He did indeed, for the second race running as well. I thought Felipe Nasr as well had a good race too, didn't he? Where was he? Was he in top 10?
He ended 11th, but he started 8th.
Oh, I'm sure he had a better race than that. Oh, well, maybe I won't give it to him then. How about you, Steve?
Yeah, no, I was going to go for Felipe Massa, actually. You know, I thought he had a pretty solid race. You know, I don't think there was any arguing with his race, given where the car that he's driving is. I think he put in a pretty top performance, actually.
Goat of the weekend?
You just kind of have to say McLaren. It all went bad, you know, backwards for them. Red Bull were kind of similar, but they did gain a few places. In fact, Ricciardo got a point. But I think McLaren, for me, just they haven't improved.
At least they're not whinging about it, which Red Bull are whinging a bit about it.
Yeah, I would agree with McLaren in general, but I mean, you could probably say that for every race. So I think for a change, I might actually, to be honest, just to throw one out there, Lewis Hamilton, because he crossed the white line.
He did. I mean, it didn't. The did it make any difference? Do you think he crossed the pit lane line? Didn't he? Got a stop go.
I think after that, he accepted that it wasn't really worth trying to make up the time to Rosberg and try and pass him. You know, because reality of gaining or being a 5 second lead ahead of him. I think he kind of gave up after that. So I think you probably could say that it may have made a difference. I mean, before the pit stops, they actually seemed to be gaining on him, and he got quite close, and you start to sort of think, oh, is there a little bit there in hand? And then obviously when you crossed the right line, got the penalty, you know, it was just going to be a bit of a waste of time, really. So I'd probably say for him, you know, it's a bit of a schoolboy error for someone who's actually really quite experienced.
Yeah, I mean, it's a clear written rule. You cross the white line, it's penalties. So, I mean, he just seemed to fall asleep for that split second and go across. But then he should know better, to be honest.
He should. Mine was going to be Jenny Gow. And I like Jenny Gow. But the problem was, you know, at the start of the BBC's coverage of the weekend, she was desperate to know if in the driver's briefing, when Nico Hülkenberg walked in, all the drivers stood up and applauded him. And I'm like, no, these are racing drivers. There's no way they're all going to get up and applaud someone, another fellow driver, when they come in, unless, you know, they've cheated death, and then they might possibly allow their egos to do that. But it's just not going to happen. I mean, a couple of them might have come up to them and said, oh, well done. But so she kept pushing this point, and eventually someone asked Nico, and he said, no. And I was like, of course they said no. There's just never going to happen. But there we go.
He said himself it's not a major big deal for him. He's happy to have won. It's good. It's brilliant. But, you know, Formula One's different. It's
ho-hum. And highlight of the weekend. I know it was a little while ago. I would say Maldonado's catch, personally. But
yeah, that's what I was going to say. It was a good save. And it was a bit of a
Steve.
I think on the basis no one actually got hurt, the Alonso and Raikkonen crash.
Yeah, that was more of a wince.
No one got hurt.
Yes, quite exactly. Thank God.
I think there was more skid marks than just the ones left on the road as well.
Oh dear. Okay, Silverstone. We will look at Britain, round 9 of the Formula One World Championship, but first, let's just catch up a bit on the news. We sort of touched on this a little bit as we've gone along. Lots of talk about Formula One takeovers, and even to the point where people like Eddie Jordan say, Bernie, it's time to go. And maybe these people who will take over, I think there's one consortium, isn't there, led by people in Qatar. And then there's a suggestion Sky might make a bid. And, you know, will Bernie be around? What are we making of this?
I just wonder if we've been here before, really, you know, with this, and it sort of seems that whatever we've had, and people have suddenly got excited that they might finally not have to bow and listen to Bernie Eccleston, you know, and then he's managed to survive. I don't know. I think I'd rather sort of wait and see what happens. Because, I mean, didn't he sell, like, part of his rights or something years ago? And then people sort of thought that would be the end of him in Formula One. And I mean, he just seemed to just continue to have the power, you know. So I don't know. I'll see what happens, really, for me. But
no, it's going to be interesting. One thing I have heard was having an independent body, you know, to decide things, which I think would be a good idea. And I think Christian Horner actually mentioned someone like Ross Brawn. I think that could be quite interesting if Ross Brawn came into it and said, right, these are the rules. Because he's had experience from designing the cars himself, from running a team. And I suppose, you know, as he's had time at Ferrari and obviously with Honda in the past, which then became Braun and Mercedes, he's not necessarily going to be biased to one team either. So it would be quite interesting to see what he comes up with.
It would be. I like that as well. And one other thing, I mean, Toto Wolff says he wants the criticism of Formula One to stop. I think he's getting a bit tired of it. I think it is getting a bit of a bashing at the moment, and I don't think all of it is fair. I suppose this ties in with what we could do to fix it, and I know you've got some ideas, Steve, because you teed it up earlier, but what do you make of all that, Rich?
Well, it does need to stop. I've heard people whinging about Formula One and saying, oh, it doesn't sound right, and then they've been, you know, raving about Formula E, saying how brilliant it is, and it's like, great, so you're hearing nothing in Formula E apart from...
Well, they're like milk floats.
Yeah, you have a little wine, don't you?
Scalextrics.
It is just like Scalextrics.
And yet they complain about Formula One and that there's not enough noise, and it's like, well, there's more noise than Formula E. But then the other thing, it does need to stop. And I saw someone was telling me, they read online the other day, someone who said, oh, I've been a fan of Formula One for 30 years and now I hate it, you know, during the 80s it was so much better. And I was like, right, so during the 80s when you had McLaren, who won, was it 14 or 15 races or something? That was better than what we've got now, where, you know, okay, we've still had two different teams win because we've had Ferrari and Mercedes, but anything can happen later in the season. We're not even halfway through quite yet. So I think that is over the top whinging from some people.
But. From some people.
I like it, Rich. Good, strong opinions. Come on then, Steve. What are we going to do?
Well, I think the...
Is it going to be refuelling?
No. I accept that one's not coming back now. I think there's... It does have an image problem. And I think a lot of the criticisms are fair. But, I do agree that kind of the criticisms do need to sort of stop, and we actually need a constructive way forward. And I think we actually need some fresh ideas, but actually coming from fresh faces. You know, someone who can actually, either someone or a group of people can actually come in who are related to the sport in some way, you know, with a positive and a big vision of what they want Formula One to be in the future, as opposed to ideas that appear to... sort of gets floated and then maybe happen for a season and two, and then they get modified or chucked out and something else comes in. But I think there's a whole collection of things that they could possibly look at doing. I mean, me and Rich talked about before we came in here, what about floating the idea of actually allowing all of the teams to decide who they would like to have as a tyre provider just for themselves. So if you end up with, you know, sort of 6, 7, 8 different tyre providers in the sport, they could develop the tyre with the team that they're just providing it for. You know, I think that could really shake things up. Or maybe just having the two tyre providers that we used to have in, I think it was the early 2000s, wasn't it? Yeah. I think there's a collection. It seems that they tend to try and bring back old ideas, which I don't really think is the answer. I think it's a short-term solution. I think we actually need something new, and I think it needs to be consulted by various sort of groups of people, fans as well, drivers as well. I think there's all sorts of ideas out there that they could possibly look at sort of floating. One thing I thought of the other day is, obviously as you get within a second of the driver in front, you get sort of DRS if you're within the zones. How about allowing the driver, you know, behind, once they're in, you know, with that sort of second range, over the radio to be able to talk to the guy in front?
Oh, and say what exactly?
Whatever they like.
I'm coming to get you.
Yeah. How much would people like that on the TV?
Why don't you get out of my way?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That could just be the one idea that just transforms everything.
I like that. Inter-drivers communications.
We'd have a lot of "whee" as someone was driving past, and, you know, it'd be a bit like football crowds, you know, shouting at each other, but with the drivers.
Yeah, or sledging in cricket. It'd be,
granted, I think the idea is a bit of a Jeremy Clarkson type style idea, but you know,
which, as we know, makes them brilliant ideas.
Balance it out with serious suggestions to partially stupid ones.
I liked it. I think it's another way the NRF1 podcast is helping to solve Formula One's ills, most definitely. Right, let's get on with Silverstone then, shall we? Cracking race as always. Britain back home, Formula One teams only have to roll down the hill. Force India may be able to roll that new car out and all sorts. We like it. And who is it the most important weekend for? It's a tricky one. It's normally a Mercedes answer, but
well, I think it's also a big weekend for McLaren again. We get to see how much their car's improved from the Austria test, and if they can finish the race and they've got a bit of speed about them, they could get tail end of the points, but they need to sort something out because the season's going to be a write off otherwise. And I would say it's big for them, but then you've also got teams like Ferrari and Williams who it's big for at the front. Can they make any leeway and catch anyone else?
I think it'll be brilliant to see Williams do well at Silverstone. I think they've done well certainly last season, obviously, and they've just not quite matched that this year, but I think if they could do something at Silverstone, that'd be brilliant for the team. Also, if Force India can do something with whatever it is they're planning to wheel out, certainly a big weight race for them, and Nico Hülkenberg, see if he can carry on with his improvement post Le Mans.
Yeah, I think it would. That would be nice as well. But I think just going back to Williams, I think that would actually be really quite nice thinking about it, because, I mean, Williams is sort of one of the smaller, bigger teams, if you like. I mean, they actually have quite a small budget, really. And what they seem to do on a very small budget, I think actually kind of really proves a point that, you know, not always, but you don't necessarily need to be spending hundreds of millions of pounds. It can be done on a smaller budget. And there's so much history with Williams as well. You know, I mean, they've won championships and, you know, and have dominated in the past. And I think it would just be nice to sort of see him even, you know, either get on the podium or close to it, or, you know, or at least have quite a strong showing on a Saturday on the qualifying, you know, would it be nice.
Now, this is bad news here, I'm afraid, for everyone, but in terms of predictions, we're going to have to give a prediction update after the British Grand Prix, because as yet, the table is to be is undecided. So we will come back to how the prediction picture stands after the British Grand Prix, and I'll at that point update you on how everyone did with their Austria predictions too. That doesn't mean or preclude us from making predictions for Silverstone, though, of course. So we will do that now. Who'd like to go first? Rich, you've been nominated by Steve and myself in this case to go first.
Well, I have,
you better have some in the end, Steve.
I have written them down, so it's okay. I've gone for a few gambles this week.
Oh, that's not like you.
Oh no, I never do that, do I? No, I thought last week I'm not going to say too much, but I did all right, I think.
Did you? Yeah, well, I've got to work them out, but yeah, I think you might have done all right.
But this week I thought I'll go for a couple, you know, okay, a couple of gambles maybe. The first one I'm going to say is both McLarens to finish the race.
Wowzers. That's off the basis of their test, I bet.
Yeah, I mean, it looked like they picked up, and you know, we all saw the new front wing Alonso had in Austria, which lasted about two corners. But yeah, I'm hoping they'll finish the race. My second one is another quite a big gamble, but I'm going to say two British drivers in the top 10.
Okay, well, yeah. Are there only three?
Yeah.
Stevens, Jensen, and Lewis.
Those three, so you never know. If it all goes well for Button, he could get up there, or maybe Stevens will jump in the wrong red car and it will take a Ferrari instead, and he'll get second. But
yeah, that would be nice.
It's worth a gamble, you know.
Yeah. I think we know which is most likely are those two, and that's really not very likely. But still.
Third one is neither Red Bull to finish in the top 10.
Okay, yeah. Not including Toro Rosso in that, obviously.
No, just the Red Bull Racing team. But alternatively, Verstappen to finish in points. So Verstappen in top 10. And my last one, I don't know what's going to happen, but Vettel to finish second.
So you don't know how, but he will finish second.
Yes, whether that be someone spins ahead of him or he just gets it from his own credit, you know. We'll see. But it's happening.
It is happening here. Steve, would you like me to go before you?
No, I've been thinking. I think what I'll do is I'll start from Friday and work my way through to Sunday.
Okay.
So, fairly typical. For FP1, 2 and 3, I'm going to say Mercedes are just going to top all of those.
Both of them?
No. Only, just at least one of them.
A Mercedes on A the top Mercedes, of
yeah,
each.
Top all three of them. And then in Saturday qualifying, I think both Red Bulls are not going to make Q3.
Okay.
But I do think one McLaren driver will make Q2.
Okay.
And I think the Mercedes drivers will be split on the front row. I think there'll be someone between them, and I'm not going to predict who because I have absolutely no idea.
For qualifying. Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, one of them will be pole, one will be third. Yep. So someone will split between them. I'm going to say there's going to be a safety car because I think there's quite a few teams that have brought updates and high hopes and things like that. And we've had a fair few safety cars recently, so I think it's a good bet. And no rain throughout the weekend on the basis of the glorious sunshine.
So no intermediate or wet tyres to be used during any Formula 1 session over the weekend?
No, not from Friday, Saturday or Sunday.
Okay, I'll have to keep an eye on that one. It's good that I need to have a watch of it. Okay, I am going to say that there will be a Williams on the podium. That all, it's slightly different to yours, Rich, but all three British drivers will finish the race, which is probably still a bit of a punt, really. I think both Lotus drivers will finish in the points, and I believe that Nico Hülkenberg will finish in the top six.
Ooh.
Big un?
That is, yeah. That's a good shout as well.
I think it's a big un. And Pastor. I'm going to have a Pastor bet. Because I think... Oh, and I've already said he's going to finish in the points, haven't I, really? So I can't really have another finish. Another nibble. But I think he'll finish above Romain Grosjean. There you go. I think he'll continue that kind of form. I don't think I genuinely believe that one, but I've said it now. So there we go. Right, I think we're going to wrap that up. Slightly curtailed, although I think we've done quite well. It's still a reasonably length podcast with our merry band. But we will be back. We've got a bit of a break, haven't we, after Silverstone, I think, until the Hungarian Grand Prix.
Yeah, I think thanks. 3 weeks.
Yeah, 3 weeks. No Germany.
Yeah.
So we will be back after Silverstone. We'll go through properly what happened there. We'll bring you right up to date with all the predictions and what have you. I'm sure we'll be putting stuff up on the website too. Rich, your blog is imminent for the website, so that will be going up soon. And hopefully, although I better check with Kyle, we'll be getting some predictions and tips. I think he did all right. I know this, the Perez to finish in the points one came off for Austria because I put a couple of quid on it. So
that's all right.
Yeah. And I think maybe that was why I was disappointed about Bottas, because I think he was down for a podium finish and yeah. I thought he might have done that if he'd have...
I did read today, actually, I think it was Hamilton, you know, the treble, the fastest lap, pole and race win, but he only got one of them.
Scuppered. But there we go. So we'll have all that going on our website, which is nrf1.uk, and all the links that you will need. You can also follow on Twitter at the nrf1. I think that's all that stuff. There's also our karting video that we did about 2 years ago is almost finished. It's only taken 2 years to do it. I'm going to put that up on YouTube soon, and that will be on the website. That will be quite comical, I think, to watch. Ho-hum. Maybe not. So that will be interesting one to catch. And you can get all of us on Twitter if you wish. I'm at Michael J. Bailey. Rich, you're on?
At Bax_kid.
And you're on Facebook, aren't you, Steve?
I am. Steve Rust. You add me.
There you go.
Or message me, for that matter.
Whatever. You won't find him on Twitter.
Nope.
Not yet. Not ever. I'm starting to believe.
Probably not.
He loves it. All right, thank you, gents. As always, thank you all for listening. Get hold of us, get in touch. We love to hear from you. I must admit, I think we had some extra predictions in from Sam Todd. I think he was back on the prediction hotline for Austria. I can't remember what they were or how they went, but we'll add those into the mix too. So it's great to have them coming in from you guys out there. And if anyone else wants to put in any predictions for Silverstone, please do. You can email them in. I think the address is nrf1podcast@gmail.com. If it bounces back, apologies. You can do it on Twitter as well. Get in touch. And all you need to do is get us the predictions in before the start of FP1. And then they'll all be lovely and valid. Right, we're done. Thanks, gents, as I said. Thank you all for listening. We always appreciate it. And we'll see you after Silverstone with an update on the Prediction League and probably the Formula One as well. Until then, bye for now.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.